Good morning, everyone. I am Ward Ahmed here today.
And I'm Abdul Majid Awan.
Here is the Smashy Business Show for you today. It's Friday. Today, it's the 8th of November, and we have really, really exciting topics for you.
Yeah.
How are you today, Majid? It's nice to have you back.
Just feeling under the weather a little. Yeah. I guess everyone is. It's the weather is changing in the Emirates, in Dubai, in the UAE, everywhere in the Middle Eastern region. So yeah, just a little under the weather. But I'm back.
You know what's so strange? Whenever we think like, oh, okay, it's gotten cold.
Yeah.
It goes right back to the humidity.
Yeah. In the morning today, it was a little hot because usually I don't turn on the ACs at home in the morning. But today I had to, like, for a little while, maybe. Yeah, every day is a different day in Dubai.
Yeah.
Be it business or be it weather, every day is a new day, a different day. So,
and yeah. Just to start with our topics today, number one, we have Bella Hadid. Essentially, what she did is that she called this Dubai-based bakery, Tauntaun, out of control beautiful. And this bakery, Tauntaun, it's in Wasl 51 in Jumeirah.
Oh, nice.
Now, the reason why I see this, the lens that I see this incident from is honestly, Majid, when influencers or just famous celebrities in general comment on a business, that business truly does boom.
Yeah.
It does make a difference.
Yeah, a lot of the way businesses, the startups or bakery startups even, when they establish themselves in this hub, everyone comes here, to be honest. We see Cristiano Ronaldo walking the streets, Haaland walking the streets, sports star. Then we see Ryan Babel was here, one of the football stars, on the Love in Dubai show yesterday. Everyone comes to Dubai for some reason, for one reason or another. So yeah, these startups get a lot of hype from that. It's good. One of the positive things, a little related to this is, that His Highness, the Dubai ruler, he usually visits London, and he also goes to the brands which are Dubai-based and have expanded to London.
Mm.
So we see a lot of posts from them that whenever His Highness is there, or His Highness Sheikh Hamdan, Faza is there, all of these people, whenever they go to any country, they try to find someone who has a Dubai origin or a UAE origin, and they go visit those places. So it's a very good technique, not for brands, not by brands only. The rulers themselves, they want to promote their local brands.
Mm.
So it's a very nice mix-up of everything. I love those videos that they're going there.
Mm.
And even here, sometimes they're going to, you can see the Dubai ruler and the UAE ruler roaming about on streets and going to brands. So it's a very nice move from them. Gives them a push in marketing. This bakery now getting a push from Bella Hadid, obviously it'll do
yeah,
good.
You know, they even posted it on their Instagram, like showing their gratitude.
Yeah.
And honestly, I'm so happy for them because Bella Hadid, she has a lot of followers on Instagram.
Yeah.
She actually posted it on her story on Instagram.
Yeah.
And but to be honest with you, we see the influence of influencers and celebrities and businesses, especially in fixed dessert.
Yeah.
And the fixed dessert chocolate would actually...
No one knows it at fixed dessert. Everyone calls it viral Dubai chocolate,
exactly,
right?
Exactly. And what actually, what the immediate cause of the fixed dessert fame was actually this influencer, this foodie influencer in Dubai. Her name's Maria. She posted a video of their chocolate. And she got like more than 60 million views on that video on TikTok. And from there on, it immediately became the Dubai chocolate, the Dubai chocolate. And you know, by the way, not only has like the entire world imitated it, but now the very best creators of chocolate, Lindt, have recreated it, by the way. Just recently, like I saw the post this week, Lindt now have their own Dubai chocolate. But it's so funny because, by the way, I see it everywhere, Baskin-Robbins now has the ice cream.
Yeah.
All of these like very niche chocolate brands. But to be honest with you, do you imagine? I still don't think that all of these brands recreating it takes away from the value of what Sarah Hamouda, the founder of Fix, has done. Because if you think about it, all of these versions, I would basically call them like a dupe or like the fake one, honestly. I would.
Yeah, let's go back to invention or like creation. Someone created a wheel, right?
Yeah.
But now we have like five, six big wheel companies for cars, automotives, everything. So it's good that one product gets a lot of attention, and then a lot of people create replicas, call it fakes, call it whatever. But it's good that one brand, one new brand, one new idea getting recognition, and then everyone trying to copy it. There's a lot of good about it, because that brand gets a lot of recognition, because people are like, no, brand loyalty, we lead this chocolate only, Fix dessert only. But other brands coming up, they give competition to Fix as well. And competition is always good for the consumer. I love whenever there is a competition, good competition going on between brands, because that way the consumer also always benefits, because brands start stop compromising on quality. They'll give you the best quality at a very affordable rate, because if they know that if we don't, someone else will. So it's always good for the consumer. I love this competition going on between brands. Even the biggest brands, Pepsi Coke debate is like nearly a century old now. Everyone talks about Pepsi or Coke. Like everyone talks about Ronaldo or Messi. Everyone is like Pepsi or Coke. So again, competition builds good quality in product, and it also gives rise to more, more quality for the consumer, more price affordability. Everything becomes great with competition.
I actually, I also tried the one on Noon. So Noon, they also replicated it, and they, I believe they call it the big...
Lulu also has their own,
really?
This chocolate brand. Everyone now has a Kunafa sort of chocolate brand. So even if you can't get your hands on fixed dessert, you can at least get a taste of what it may feel like.
By the way, you know, like them recreating this chocolate, I don't believe it just created competition. What it also created is almost a trend that might just be left behind in like 2024. Because if you remember when like it was such a big trend for, I mean, they still do it, but for brands to put Cheetos on everything, they'd put Cheetos on burgers, on ice cream, on mac and cheese.
Yeah.
Now, by the way, now when I think about that, I think of it as in, oh, that's so 2019.
Yeah.
And what I'm afraid with fixed dessert is that it becomes something in like a decade's time where people are like, oh, that's so 2024. Do you get what I mean?
Yeah.
I think that might happen to it. But at the same time, the competition, I don't think it's that much of an issue, because think of it like this. Okay, like I'm somebody, I can't afford the fixed dessert chocolate, right? So I go for one of the fake versions. But in the end of the day, that's the most real version.
Yeah.
If it still has that value, because it's the same way with bags, it's the same way with the shoes.
Yeah, everything.
Of course, you know, the fake shoe, it's something, right?
Yeah.
But if you actually get the real thing, it's almost a luxury. Yeah. And I think fixed dessert in itself, the marketing, everything around it, it is a luxury, because I believe they had a collaboration with Fazat, and they created a halwa fixed dessert for him. And that in itself, that collaboration in itself, it's proof that it's like, it's a luxury. Fixed dessert is a luxury, because I even see it in so many comment sections. People are always like, oh, my dream is to try out the real Dubai chocolate. Yeah. So yeah, I think...
No, your point... A lot of points, but mainly like two or three main points are like social media is the biggest power right now for any brand. One, the new media wave, all the social media platforms, it's the biggest thing that you can use for your product. The old techniques of hoardings and everything may work, does work sometimes. Depends brand to brand, but it's now gone down. Everyone wants something on social media, collaboration with a influencer, collaboration with the brand, this and that. Second point, the real taste, the original taste, it is always going to be the original taste. You can't change it. You can't, like, if you talk about any other brand, every brand has their own unique taste or unique touch, be it clothing, food, chips, biscuits. You can find like 100 type of chocolate chip cookies in the market, but you will have a favorite one. Maybe I have a favorite one. I may have a local favorite. You may have a global favorite. So depending on the taste buds as well, but good marketing, obviously. gives you the edge. And luxury-wise, this point that you made, that it's a luxury to eat the wave.
But at the same,
viral chocolate.
I don't think it was just good marketing.
It is.
But I don't just think it was good marketing. By the way, I think it's what she did is she created something that it wasn't existing in the market. It wasn't there.
I've read a lot of comments and social media things that it was already there in some form. It wasn't like chocolate kunafa like the way she gives it in the form of a bar. But I've seen that a lot of people are saying that, oh, already kunafa chocolate, like kunafa with chocolate spread over it was there. She just turned it into a product. So I think it's good branding. She made a brand of it. In some form, it already existed. Nutella kunafa, must have heard it if you're in this region. People eat it. There's Nutella paratha. There's Nutella everything now. So people knew about this. It's just that she turned it into a unique thing. And then marketed it properly. So creating a brand out of an existing thing.
It was never actual in a chocolate bar, though.
Yeah.
That's
the
thing.
The shape, the form, the final product that we see,
exactly.
It wasn't in that form.
You know, it almost reminds me of Willy Wonka.
Yeah.
Like, I just love it. It's just so
special. The
movie
just came out, I guess. My wife was watching it the other day. With Timothée Chalamet.
Yeah, Timothée Chalamet.
It just came out. I recently went to a brunch as well, which is Willy Wonka-inspired brunch. In some hotel, I don't even remember. I only go for the food. But yeah, Willy Wonka is one of the iconic chocolate characters. But coming back to the brand, yeah, the best thing that she did, I love it. Everyone can create something, new innovations, new inventions. They're not difficult to make. Someone can come up with an idea, but how do you market it? I remember when I was studying like 10 years ago, one of my teachers gave me the example of the printer guy. I don't remember the name exactly, but I remember the story that he created a printer. And he, at that time, he created printer, scanner, and all the three things that you get in a photocopier as well. So he created it, but he didn't know how to market it. So for nearly 10 years, no one bought it from him. And then eventually Xerox, which we know as, Xerox copy. Can you make a Xerox copy of this? It became a brand name. Xerox was the company which was called something else back then. They bought it and they realized that it has very big potential, the photocopier, scanning and printing machine. So they bought it and it took him like 10 years to get the. It's like the go-to product in every office. Obviously, we're going away from paper now due to sustainability. But for like good nearly 50, 60, 80 years, printers, scanners and photocopiers, they were the best thing possible in your office or anywhere. So yeah, creating a product is not the last step. It's the first. Actually, it's step zero. Then how do you sell it? How do you market it? That's the main game. And creating this chocolate wasn't that difficult. Kunafa already exists. Chocolate already exists. The combination, nearly the Nutella kunafa thing, already existed. She created it in a brand thing, and then she marketed it properly. That's like the Steve Jobs thing that she did. Steve Jobs didn't make the Apple or iPhone or anything. He was the marketing guy. So the products became Apple because of Steve Jobs' marketing and sales mentality and like the expertise that he had. Likewise, her also did a good job with it.
Yeah,
and
I see what you
just,
mean.
One problem I have with the brand that sooner or later she will have to expand. And what's that plan that we have to see? Like, how does she plan to expand it? How does she improve the production? This is always my concern, that there will come a time when the virality of the chocolate will go down. And then what? Then what's plan B for her? She needs to think on it. Just a suggestion, sister.
I agree with you. I agree with you. But just on the topic of Tonton Bakery, this is so great for them because the brand actually just recently launched this year. So this is really going to help them with business. And also on Bella Hadid herself, I'm not sure if she's still in Dubai, but the fact that she was here for such a short amount of time and she still managed to get that post out. Because, by the way, influencers and celebrities, they get sent so much stuff.
Yeah.
So that somebody remembers to post something about you, that is so, so, so huge. And just on the topic of Bella Hadid herself, just recently this year, she had a controversy with Adidas. So
Adidas, yeah.
essentially, she was a part of the Adidas campaign and she was dropped from it because the shoes that she was marketing from them, they were a part of the 1972 Munich Olympic Games. And during those games, I believe 11 Israeli athletes died, and Israel saw the entire campaign as a threat, and Adidas responded by dropping her from the
Yeah,
campaign. But
because Bella Hadid is a
despite,
very strong, like a pro personality for Palestine
she is
and the whole, yeah.
Palestinian, yeah, and
So.
it's so amazing to see how, despite the backlash that she faced from the entire event, she's still like continuing to be one of the best supermodels in the world. Like just recently, there was a Victoria's Secret
Yeah.
fashion show. Bella
Came after
Hadid was
like a lot
there.
of time, right?
Yeah, and she also launched her own perfume brand, by the
Yeah.
way. I believe they sell their largest bottle, 100 ml. It's $100,
Oh,
which is it's
not bad.
not
Not
too
bad.
bad
Yeah.
whatsoever. So we can really see that, this is a character who not only does she what's it called? Not only does she reign within her own landscape,
Yeah.
but she also understands the importance of, supporting other
Yeah.
businesses, I think, from what we see here.
Yeah, and again, Bella Hadid, every big personality that's like household name,
Yeah.
everyone knows them. Them supporting small businesses is always a good move. Actually, it shows the softer side of celebrities as well. It's not just
Yeah.
that they liked it. They also want to show the world that, oh, we have the softer side. We just don't want our brand, like Arabella or her perfume brand or anything that she has under her brand name. She doesn't want them to become big. She also wants to support the SMEs and the whole industry around her. So again, very good move from any celebrity, not even not only Bella Hadid. If anyone, you read a story about Rihanna wearing a jewelry brand, right? Emirati women's jewelry brand. I
It was
remember
at this
that.
football game.
Yeah, so she wore it there. Recently, someone else wore an Egyptian jewelry brand. So these brands coming out of this region, they're growing. Everyone is wearing them. Everyone is liking them. And
Yeah.
they have very good like designs. They
They
have
do.
their own.
Even the necklace that I'm wearing right now, it's by this brand. It's called Cairo, Cairo with a K. And their jewelry, it's absolutely beautiful.
Yeah. So yeah, the Middle Eastern touch to the jewelry and designing and everything, even not even jewelry, perfume-wise, everything-wise. Remember we talked about the way UAE's biggest exports were perfumes in a report. So yeah, they have their own touch, and the world is
Yeah.
recognizing that Emirati or that Middle Eastern touch, and they're loving it. So good for all the brands. Good for business for everyone. So yeah, next story. There's Harsh Sajnani, CEO of the Dubai-based startup Kingpin. He has emphasized the importance of great business partnerships. He actually told a story on his LinkedIn that how he met his first investor, Amir Farha, founder of Koto Ventures. And it's a very nice story. We did a story on this that how he went into the chat, and the chat was not about the product or anything. The guy, Amir, he just asked him about how he spent his childhood, what he did. He wanted to understand the person, not the brand at that point. And then they got into a partnership, and eventually Kingpin grew, obviously. They have 200 brands they're working with, 4,000 buyers and across 75 countries. It's a warehouse management system, as far as I remember, I read. So it's good that he gave a lesson in entrepreneurship. That
Yeah.
partnership, your first partnership, or at least any partnership that you do, always find good people to partner with, not the people who just want money from you.
I so
Yeah.
agree with you, but what's a lesson that you have for future entrepreneurs, Majid?
I did
Just a
try
lesson in
my.
general to be like
I
successful.
did dip my feet in entrepreneurship in my like good days.
Good
The
days.
only, yeah.
The
Yeah, like the time
Yeah.
between 20, 25 or 26,
Yeah.
27, where you get a job and you make some savings and you want to do something, you have this energy and passion to do something.
Yeah.
The only lesson that I learned from one failed venture was that always have a lot of money in the back. If you're investing 100,000, don't think that's the only money that you will need. Always have like 500,000 in the back, kept ready. to put into the business. Mm. So always have backup, be it personnel-wise, be it monetarily, anything. Don't think no one will leave your company. Mm. Everyone has, people who do jobs, they can always leave. So don't depend on anyone completely, one. And two, always, always have a backup for money. Always have, like invest 100, at least have 500 in the bank.
But I don't think you should fear losing money either. Because like something, a trend that I see in a lot of, you know, my uncles, my grandparents, they almost have this fear of losing money. Like even if they have a very large amount of savings, you know, when their children come to them and they're like, hey, it would be really smart to make this money decision, they're actually too afraid to invest their money. They're more comfortable with the idea of just saving and saving rather than investing.
Yeah.
And I don't always think that's a good thing. But, you know, just on the topic of like lessons in general, Majid, like this is something I am so passionate about. If you want to be successful in life or you just want to be somebody who's always building your momentum every single year, you need to have a good circle. You need to have good friends because, look, maybe it sounds harsh, but if your friends are losers, you're going to be a loser too.
Yeah,
I really do believe in
this. The environment or the village raises a kid, the environment makes a man. That's like the most go-to advice anyone will give you. So yeah, always surround yourself with people who talk about ideas, the same motivational thing that I can say.
Just go-getters in general.
Find a gathering where there's gossip or where there's just negativity. Just find people who are better than you, maybe, and then sit with them.
I don't think gossip's always negativity, though.
No, just, sometimes you need that. Like, you need take your mind away from work and relax. So, for that, it's good. But if you want to grow, obviously, if you're in your young age where you have the energy and you can somehow get the money or the funding or your parents, you can convince them. Like at its days, if I go to my parents, like, oh, invest in my idea, they'll be like, bro, go. Like, you're too old now. You don't have that kind of energy. So a lot of things, there's this very prime period, I think, between 20 to 25, when you have the peak energy to go all in on something. So, and that point, I think you have the energy to bounce back as well. So if you go into something, even a small, even make lemonade for your neighborhood, just make it and sell it on the road for like 5 dirhams or 10 dirhams, you have that energy. Mm. And if it fails, you have the energy to bounce back. That's the most important thing. Going into a venture is the easiest thing. Coming out because it failed and then restarting, that's the most difficult part. So yeah.
No,
You need that kind of energy.
I'm afraid I don't agree with you.
Some people started at 40. I understand. Yeah. Majid Al Futtaim, biggest example, started at 50. Lulu owner started around 30, 40-ish. They're great examples. Again, you can count them on fingers. So yeah, now in this day and age, I believe everyone is coming up with a startup. Again, going back to Sir Martin Sorrell, recently he was at Athar Festival. And lastly, at the Expand North Star, he had the same advice on both occasions. Learn Chinese, learn Arabic, learn Spanish, and learn coding. So you can make a startup or at least do something, because these four things, according to him, will create the future in the media and creative landscape. So
there is a sense of truth in what you're saying, but I believe the most pertinent thing that any of us can ever do is actually cater to our natural talents.
Yeah.
Because like, for example, I have a friend, she finds it very easy to like pick up languages. Like even right now, she's in the process of learning Chinese, and she picked it up very quickly. Like everybody's very different. Everyone has different natural talents, and I believe that if you want to succeed in life, you should cater to your natural strengths. Yeah. I don't think you should try to be, you know, anything macho. I think you should just cater to your natural strengths.
It's a good idea that you're saying. Yes, why not? But what if you fail, and what's the plan B? So you always have to have A to Z plans. Like,
but this
always
is the
have
thing,
backup
though,
plans.
When,
yeah.
Look, with failure, it's not necessarily a bad thing. Like, fail fast so you can get better.
Yeah.
Because in the end of the day, There's not one thing on this earth that even if you begin it and even if you're completely passionate about it, that you're going to be good at right away. You need time.
Yeah.
Like, of course, you can read about it as much as you want. You can research about it as much as you want. But it's actually being there. It's experiencing it. It's doing it that makes you better at it. So, like, even if you fail, that's fine.
Yeah.
Like, this is truly my mentality with anything in life. Show up every single day, experience it, be in the process, and you're good to go.
Yeah.
Maybe the improvement, it won't come now. It won't come in a month, maybe even 6 months. But, like, you know, year by year, you're going to see that improvement.
How old are you? I told you, you're at your prime age, 20 to 25. That's the time when you have this kind of energy, the positivity and hope that you have in you. This is the prime time to do whatever you want
but
to
I
do in life. And
I
yes,
think
fail
I,
and come back again.
I don't think it's just me, though. Like, for example, with my father, Majid, my father, the way that he actually started, you know, I was even telling him this. I was like, Dad, I got my first job before you.
Yeah.
But my dad, he's somebody who, his first job, he worked for Ittisalat. He has a telecom degree.
Yeah.
So he worked for Ittisalat, then he moved on, he started working for Siemens, and then after Siemens, I believe he was about your age, by the way, around that time, he was like, okay, I've been an employee now for more than a decade, I want to start my own company. And then he moved to Sudan, and he started 3G technology, which until the war now, it was, you know, they stopped their operations because of the war in Sudan, but it was a very, very successful business. And, you know, for my dad, like, even I asked him, I'm like, why didn't you, like, start it earlier? Why didn't you go for it earlier? And he told me that it's like something you build over time. You build that expertise. So I don't think it's necessarily about you have that energy now. I think, you know, my dad, like, building up his portfolio, you know, because he is my role model, just seeing him build up his portfolio, you know, what I really saw was somebody, they built their expertise over time.
Yeah.
And because they built their expertise over time, they were able to go build something in Sudan and make it successful. Like, I believe one of the clients of his company, it was Qanar. And Qanar was basically a subsidiary, an ex-subsidiary for Ittisalat. So
you can see
how, I don't agree with that 20 to 25 is your prime. I feel that within this time, maybe you're figuring things out, you're going to be confused, but there's always a chance. There's always a chance. I am extremely positive. I am not a realist.
You
no, I am not.
Give your answer in your own story that your father started his first job later than you. You started it right now. So you have
Everyone's
to understand
different.
The world
Everyone
is moving very fast.
Everyone has a different energy.
Yeah. But the world is moving very fast. People are coming up with startups at the age of 21, 22, even before university. The guy we're talking about, he like started at 22, 23, did something.
Yeah.
So everyone is coming up with a new idea now because of the advancement in tech and so much ease of doing, like starting a business and everyone getting access to venture capitalists or in the modern world, at least in the like developed world, in Middle East, at least. So everyone wants to do something. And right now, if you wait till you're 30, even if you wait till you're 30, the ship would have sailed. Someone would have done something that you wanted to do or you thought was a good idea. So at that point, you'll have to upskill yourself and find a new idea. And at that point, you'll be fighting with a 22-year-old who has the new idea of that time. So you have to understand with technology, every 5 years, 10 years, something new is happening. So you either keep upskilling yourself every year, 2 years to stay with it. But again, you fighting a 22 or 23-year-old at 33-year-old, trying to beat them at their game because they grow up with that technology. They are born into that technology. You wouldn't believe it. I never saw a phone till I was 7. You were born with a phone, right? You were born.
No, I didn't get a phone right
no, no,
away.
Not get a phone, but you saw it. Your father was using it. Your mother was using it. Everyone was using it. I didn't see a phone till I was 7. Mm-hmm. And the phone that I saw was this big. We had to go up on a mountain to talk to people. And then even incoming calls were charged.
Mm.
So I saw that. Today, if you tell me to fight a kid on TikTok, who knows TikTok inside out, who knows the algorithms, who understands the content that you need, it will take me a lot of time to understand it. Obviously, I am in media, so I understand it because job.
Mm.
It's my work. But not everyone can. So
but see,
that's my point. At 20 to 25, experiment as much as you can. Even if you want to like choose a field, this is the prime time to choose a field and set a target line for yourself that I'll spend this much time in this field, learn this, 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 make a list, and then at this age or after these many years, I will start something on my own. So it's not like 20 to 25 is the age to start something. Mm. It's a very good age to plan something in the future. Mm. So yeah, you have the energy to do a job, go to the university, then work on your startup and then keep your social gathering. You need a lot of energy for all of this, right? To keep a social life, keep a professional life, and to keep on working on your own ambitions and projects that you think can become something great. Yeah. That time is the prime energy time. That's it.
I don't think
you don't want to start, no problem. Go into a field, take experience, but keep a timeline for yourself and plan the planning part in that age. You will have the, your brain also works in a very fast way, better way. After 30, it's a, the graph is like this. It's
I
not
don't know, Majid. Maybe
yeah,
this might
the
be
average
a
human
experience.
Life on this planet right now is 55 to 60. That's the average age. If you exclude the extremities of like people living to 100 and people dying early because of disease and everything, the average life is 55 to 60. So 30 years, if you start, you're already on a downslope. So it's better to start early, fail, come back again. You'll always have time. Let's quickly go on to the, yeah, we go into a lot of like, I don't know, these are metaphysical debates or career debates, but I love her energy in this, to be honest. So, yeah.
But I still don't agree with you.
Yeah,
no
it's fine.
No such thing as
we,
prime time.
Let's just agree to disagree, my
prime
friend.
Prime time is all the time. But
yeah,
okay. Just on the second topic, CNN Fast launches on Stars On in the MENA region. So this actually coincided with the U.S. elections and Trump winning. And what is basically going to happen is that CNN Fast is going to provide high-speed news, business, and entertainment in an ad-supported format for MENA audiences.
Nice. CNN coming. CNN already has their established presence, but this for the elections was a very good idea with coinciding with the elections. Mm. A very simple news to understand that they saw an opportunity and they grabbed it. Mm-hmm. Good job.
And for our third topic today, Saudi Arabia is reporting a launch of a $100 billion AI initiative to challenge the UAE's leadership in the sector. So what actually are they doing? What is the project's name? It's called Project Transcendence.
Yeah.
What does this mean, Majid? What are they
Transcendence
doing?
Transcendence is like going to another plane of thought. But yeah, Project Transcendence, it's been reported by Bloomberg that they are trying to create a whole infrastructure for data centers. Most important thing for AI because you need a lot of data to store for AI. Then they're going to invest in startups, AI startups, then talent, AI talent, and aiming to develop AI models in Arabic, basically. Mm. So we already know Arabic LLM coming from Abu Dhabi. Mm-hmm. It's called JS, J-A-I-S 70. So it's the newer version. They had a JS 30 and JS 10, but now they have JS 70 also. There's a Hindi LLM that was created in the UAE, Nanda. So Saudi Arabia, basically, one I saw a comment on social media that, oh, why are you saying to challenge UAE's leadership in the sector? Because right now UAE is the leader in the region in regards to AI. G42, I'll give you just some facts, just throw it, so you understand the UAE dominance in AI right now. $1.5 billion from Microsoft, G42 got that. Two data centers in Abu Dhabi from with collaboration from Microsoft. Microsoft did set up a regional headquarter in Saudi Arabia, but most of their business dealings right now in the Middle East are in the UAE. The Google CEO just met Sheikh Hamdan. That's on LinkedIn. Everything that you see right now coming from Middle East. Oh, UAE got H100s, the best NVIDIA chip right now in the market before Saudi Arabia. They are getting H200s, that is in the UAE, before Saudi Arabia. Mm. So yeah, Saudi Arabia is developing this plan to like become their dominant force. It's again that constructive race between Saudi and UAE. They want to become better than each other. It's not a fight that, oh no, we hate them or something. It's a very good fight that everyone wants to become better. So they're just climbing the ladders. So this 100 billion AI initiative, it's not just like someone will give them 100 billion or they'll earn it from somewhere. It's going to come through different things. Mainly, I saw when I was reading this report that Andreessen Horowitz, the biggest VC fund which loves to invest in every good startup that they see. Mm-hmm. They in the US, Andreessen Horowitz is, to be honest, the biggest VC fund, mm-hmm. and they invest in literally every US or Canadian startup mm-hmm. that they see potential in. The biggest startups have money from them. PIF is trying to make a $40 billion AI venture fund only for this. Mm. So Saudi is trying something, not because they just see an opportunity. They see that a neighbor is already doing it.
Yeah.
UAE is doing 1 million mm. things in the field of AI. Recently, Sheikh Thanoon, again, the guy we always discuss him whenever we talk about AI, he was one of the top 100 guys in AI in the world by Times, when Times reported their 100 list. So he just posted a few pictures of him standing in the data centers. Because G42 again has Core42, which mm. deals with data centers. G42 has bought the oldest UAE data center making company in the UAE. So G42 mm. is like the main thing in AI right now. So this whole argument is that, yeah, Saudi Arabia developing this fund is to beat UAE's dominance, or at least become dominant themselves in mm. the AI field.
Yeah.
Because that's the future, to be honest.
Of course yeah. it is. And with that being said, thank you so much for watching, everyone. To every single one of our viewers, we appreciate you so much. This is the Smashy Business Podcast, a part of the Smashy sure. production under the Augustus Media Podcast Network. Don't forget, you can follow us on our newsletter, on Instagram, on X, and also on YouTube. Thank you so much for tuning in, and have a lovely weekend.
Bye-bye.